So today we have, I'm very excited to welcome Carol Peterson, who is an accomplished compounding pharmacist with decades of experience helping patients improve the quality of life through bioidentical HRT. Carol has a huge list of professional accomplishments, accreditations and affiliations. But the reason I'm so excited to speak to Carol is because she has spent many years researching and using progesterone as a therapeutic treatment for severe PMS with great success. I'd love for you to tell us more about yourself and more about this particular area of your work. But just to mention, firstly, the mainstream medical class premenstrual dysphoric disorder as a progesterone sensitivity. And we as a group of women that I support a group of women that are now in surgical menopause for the treatment of PMDD, premenstrual dysphoric disorder. The treatment pathway guidelines end with a total hysterectomy and ovary removal to eradicate the natural production of progesterone so that there is no need to add back progesterone as an add-back HRT post-surgically. We know as a group of post-surgical PMDD women that this surgery does not resolve PMDD, as we commonly still experience PMDD symptoms post-surgically amongst many other problems, and physical but largely cognitive as well. So it's very common to look into things like ADHD post-surgically, and there's a lot of neuro problems that go on post-surgically. And recently we've a small group of us have done a trial. We're 6 weeks in of adding back progesterone, and that's thanks to you and your work and the research we've done at looking through your work. And we've followed your protocol and your guidance from your articles on your website. And we've had quite transformational results, especially the cognitive side of things as well. So I'd like you to just tell us a bit more about yourself and the work that you did around this.
Okay. Thank you so much for having me, Gemma.
Okay.
About 30 years ago, I started working for a compounding pharmacy, and they were basing their work on Dr. Katarina Dalton, really a famous pioneer from the UK, made dramatic improvements in what she called PMS. She wrote a book called Once a Month, and you can find the whole constellation of symptoms that women may experience. Some of these can be quite severe, and these were the women that our pharmacy attracted. We also had a clinic, and this was all based on Dr. Dalton's work. We were compounding primarily in oral progesterone in oil. We started with safflower oil, switched to olive oil. Later, Prometrium came out in the United States, and I don't know if you have Prometrium or Utrogestin.
Yeah,
they're the oral progesterone products that are available. And we would start with a dose of 100 milligrams four times a day orally for severe PMS. And we also ended up compounding creams, gels, suppositories, rectal solutions, lozenges. You could have an injectable, any number of ways to get progesterone actually in. And I've seen women become successful with extremely high doses. It might be 2,000, 2,500 milligrams with the various dosage forms. Of course, this doesn't mean you put that in and it's all absorbed. It's not. It has no direct correlation. It's going to be very individual on how well women absorb it. But when you got enough progesterone, magic occurred. Everything disappeared.
Yeah.
And I remember one of the pharmacists I worked with, Ki Fang, he hit on this idea because once in a while we were forced with a suicidal woman or just incapacitating migraine. And he suggested that women use their doses every 2 hours and let's see what happened in an hour or two. So I know from experience, and plus many of the PMSers had permission to use progesterone liberally throughout the day, that these symptoms can be completely eradicated within hours for most. So it's really surprising to me that we come forward all this time. Now we're 30 years later, and I'm dismayed and shocked that there are so many physicians in the U.S. Really giving women tiny, tiny doses of progesterone, like 20, 30 milligrams in a capsule, in a cream, what have you, and actually making them worse. We have a whole cadre of women who believe that progesterone is the demon.
Yeah.
And this is indeed what the PMDD community has been led to believe. And sometimes maybe they have had that experience. Somebody actually did allow them to have a little progesterone, and it was a horrible experience. Dr. John Lee was a pioneer by writing a book on progesterone, and he was spot on with a lot of things, although I believe he too underdosed progesterone, coming from my experience with the really severe PMSers. So yeah. There was just plain not enough progesterone available.
Yeah.
So when I heard a lecture by him, because our experience was within hours you can relieve these symptoms, and he was at the time promoting a product called Progest, which had about 16 milligrams of progesterone in it. That's all you needed for the day. So he's saying in his lecture, just keep using it, ignore all the pain you're going through. In about 9 months, it'll settle down. Tell me a woman who's going to settle for that. So This is quite interesting, because we have a situation with PMDD. It was unknown as a separate entity for a long time. It's in the PMS constellation,
yeah.
Very, very definitely. And we happen to have a drug looking for a disease, and the drug was Prozac.
Yeah.
And so Eli Lilly, who created Prozac, did a study, did a relatively large study, created this new classification, which eventually got into a separate diagnostic code in right. the U.S. And so they invented this disease, and it still says, I checked Wikipedia today, it still is the number one treatment that you take a serotonin reuptake inhibitor drug as your primary treatment, even though the study showed about 50% effectiveness, even though progesterone, the hormone, would give you 100%, because this is indeed what your body is missing.
Yeah.
We've learned so much in the last 30 years. I got to wondering about using so much progesterone, and it started to evolve. I felt like we were this high in estrogen and we had to go way up on progesterone before yeah. we could get somebody comfortable. In the meantime, we know many things that contribute to this high estrogen effect, and we can work on them. And I believe that working on this can lower that estrogen effect, and then less progesterone would be needed. But that's a slow process. I heartily believe that you should first make yourself comfortable and then start working on bringing down this estrogen effect as much as you can. And we could go through some of the causes of that. There's just a long list of things that make estrogen more potent. Where, let's say, we'll start with the teeth.
Yeah.
If you have heavy metals in your mouth, those heavy metals will sit in your hormone receptors. We even have a name for it, metalloestrogens. So if you have that kind of exposure, well, that can also be industrial or whatever, that you are exposed to heavy metals. Then we have insecticides, pesticides, herbicides, glyphosate in Roundup, which is all over the place, is highly, highly estrogenic. We are just being dumped on with estrogenic things. Then we have the issue that if you have a disturbed microbiome, as your body's trying to detoxify your estrogen, a couple of things come into play. One is you need conjugates, like the drug Premarin, which has a myriad number of hormones from horses.
Yeah.
One of the main is estrone sulfate. It's conjugated because the sulfur group was added to the estrone. So then your body, your liver does that, the conjugation, puts it into the gut for elimination in the stool. If you have bacteria that are producing beta-glucuronidase, it uncleaves that, the estrone or estradiol, whatever estrogen, goes right back into your circulation. So you can actually be an estrogen factory, increasing the amount of your own estrogen. If you don't have enough sulfur or methyl groups in your diet or supplementation, then the liver can't conjugate as well, which is another problem that you can look at.
Yeah.
And then we have DIM. The product DIM is used to prevent the more active estrogens from being metabolized from estradiol and estrone. So all these contribute to a real mess of trying to deal with estrogens.
Yeah. So that essentially makes your estrogen higher than the level of progesterone in your body. So it pushes estrogen dominance, doesn't it? And then that's harder.
Right. Now pair that with. There are an alarming number of young women who do not produce enough progesterone. And the numbers are actually going up. And I'm relying on Dr. Jerry Lynn Pryor's research. And you can look at her website at CEMCOR, CEMCOR.ca. Right. So she has been studying this. She just did another study that involved women from 18 to 35. They were healthy, so-called healthy, to get into the study.
Yeah.
It was for another reason, but she tracked the menstrual cycle. So these 100 women at the end of about a year, and it was done in 2020, had 68% of those young women had missed ovulation and no progesterone being produced, or shortened luteal phase, meaning less progesterone is being produced than normal. She did a similar study with 300 women about 5 years prior. And in that time, she only found 10%.
Right.
So one of the things with progesterone is it's one metabolic step away from cortisol.
Yeah.
Cortisol is your stress hormone, anti-inflammatory. Excuse me. And when we're under stress, that progesterone is going to be easily diverted to help your body deal with the stress. And that's a good thing. Women have much more progesterone than men in the luteal phase. That gives us a bit of resilience over men, but over time, we may not have enough progesterone to do everything progesterone is needed to do.
Yeah.
So I think we have this whole situation brewing with PMDD. And it's very funny because looking at Wikipedia, do you know that progesterone was not mentioned once as a therapy, possible therapy? Not once. Makes me wonder if I could put it in and if it would get edited. Yes, been edited. So right. When you say you can't find information, it's absolutely true.
Yeah.
And I'm beginning to wonder. I was looking on Google to try and track down information, and I'm strongly feeling like things that should be there are not there. And I've also dabbled with ChatGPT, and I'm shocked. I said, oh, this is going to revolutionize everything. I say, write a short piece referenced on a particular subject, and it's quite biased.
Right.
And picks the poorest references you could imagine that don't even apply.
Yeah.
So I think in this age of information, which is tremendous, we also have an age of censorship going on quite a lot. So I do know a woman, young woman who says that she has PMDD, and she's just adamant that she can't use progesterone because it's not appropriate for PMDD.
Yeah.
And this is why.
There is so much fear around it. And like I myself have tried eutrogestin on two separate occasions. But I was extremely fearful of it because of the conditioning around progesterone and PMDD. And on both occasions, I took it on a night before I went to bed because I wanted to sleep through the side effects if I had anything bad going on. But in the morning, I woke up feeling extremely anxious and suicidal. And I wanted to crawl back into bed and just lay there until the feelings passed. But now, after I've done the research and I have educated myself on progesterone and the way in which it works and the way in which to use it therapeutically, I now realise that what I was suffering from at that point was the withdrawal of the progesterone. And I should have, at that point, taken another one.
Yep.
And when you do, it's almost surreal in respects to that it does work very, very quickly, and those symptoms go away extremely quickly. It's amazing.
Anxiety.
Yeah.
I just saw a little YouTube post, somebody with a menopausal thing, and she did a poll on the top 12 complaints, and anxiety was right up there.
Yeah.
Top one, and sleep was down at 7 or 8. But those are symptoms that disappear like immediately when you have enough progesterone.
Yeah.
There's another thing to talk about here is like the cycle. How's the cycling work? Should you cycle? My opinion is that if you're cycling, you should cycle progesterone.
Right.
But in the follicular phase, progesterone comes from your adrenals, and you very well could have weak adrenals.
Yeah.
And so it makes good sense to me to use progesterone maybe at a lower dose during the follicular phase. After ovulation, you can be much more generous.
Yeah.
And you may need to be to get to the luteal phase.
Yeah.
Hormone level.
Because there's also, I think what else blew my mind when I looked into all this, and you've done a video around this subject as well, is the misconceptions about the menstrual cycle chart itself. And that blew my mind because the reality behind the menstrual cycle chart, we kind of perceive it as it looks, but that's not the case, is it?
Right.
Right. But we do actually produce progesterone all through the month, don't we?
Yes, and we are. And we're not even accounting for progesterone is produced de novo all by itself, all over the body. We're stuck into this concept that we have an organ that's its function, makes sex hormones, and it doesn't apply to the rest of the body having sources of these same sex hormones. So in reality, like all the nervous system tissue, the Schwann cells make progesterone pregnenolone and use it right there. We never measure that.
Yeah.
So we wouldn't know if it was low or not. I had the occasion to be at a conference, and I was a vendor with hormone products. And this gentleman who was one of the presenters told me that when he made his presentation, he was fearful that he would fall over because his feet couldn't feel the ground and he had burning sensation. I gave him some progesterone. I said, rub this on your feet. And he came back the next morning and goes, what have you done to me? And he could now feel his feet. All the burning was gone. And it was tremendous. So men produce a little bit of progesterone from the testes, yeah, but they do produce a lot from the adrenal glands. One of the big problems is in all these menstrual cycle charts is they squeeze it and they make it look like everything's in the same units of measure. Yeah. But like in the US, we have nanograms and picograms. I know you have picograms, something.
Mall, yeah.
Yeah. So estrogen, say in picograms, you might have, let's say, 100 to 300 estradiol in the follicular phase normally. Progesterone, which most people don't even believe it's there in the first part of the cycle, yeah, will be going to 1 to 3 nanograms per milliliter, and that's 1,000 times the picogram. So the chart should really have progesterone way, way, yeah, high. And it simply doesn't. I've seen charts in endocrinology textbooks. It's like almost a conspiracy to, yeah, keep progesterone from us. Keep this. So most people believe that estrogen is like the primary female, yeah, hormone. And
we it's need to so put, deceiving, isn't it?
Yeah. We need to put all our attention on that. But that's not right. Progesterone is the most abundant hormone. Okay, so when you have women in perimenopause.
Yeah, which I'll just add to that, that in the UK, I don't know whether you're noticing it in the US, but in the UK, it's becoming increasingly common for women around the perimenopausal age to be diagnosed with PMDD, which just says to me, it just reconfirms that it's a low progesterone issue. It's not a progesterone sensitivity, because how can someone go through all the life producing progesterone and then all of a sudden becoming sensitive to it? It doesn't make sense, does it? It's not logical.
No, and also PMDD disappears during pregnancy.
Yeah.
One of the highest times of progesterone in your lifetime. People often wonder, what's the toxic level of progesterone? And you really have to get beyond the amount, I'll say more like 200 nanograms per milliliter during pregnancy, third trimester. We'd have to get beyond that dose. We're not capable of getting a dose like that to, we can support pregnancies, but we're never going to have a level that high as we produce ourselves. So in that pregnancy, both male and female fetuses swim in a sea of progesterone, and it doesn't bother them. For men, it doesn't bother their sexuality. Male babies are born. There's a myth out there that progesterone shouldn't be used by men because it will interfere with their testosterone. No, can't. No. It absolutely can't. And so men are actually told that they shouldn't use progesterone either. And there is a need for them as well, if only the adrenal function. So we have a high rise in mast cell thing, MCAS, I think they're calling it. Mast cell activation syndrome, right?
Yeah.
Inside the mast cells are a whole hormone factory.
Right.
And when estrogen is dominant inside the cell, the cell's going to release histamine.
Yeah.
So that progesterone deficiency
this is really common in surgical menopause women who aren't recommended or prescribed to take progesterone as part of the HRT. It's incredibly common, the high histamine.
Yep, exactly. And then there's the neurological issues, like I said, with the Schwann cells, but the cognitive. Inside your brain, independently of your sex organs, is a whole nother hormone factory. And luckily for us, progesterone, if you use it, does go through the blood-brain barrier, so you can use it. And luckily for us, if you use progesterone, it will support the neurological tissue, the Schwann cells. And luckily for us, it can be an antihistamine and stop this cycle of high histamine. It's just remarkable. And so remarkable how this is, propaganda fed to us. Then as your group and many other groups, I've been watching hysterectomy groups on Facebook. It's just appalling. In the U.S., I don't know about the U.K., but about 700,000 hysterectomies are performed each year in the U.S. And every single one of them, I was going to leave cancer out, but I'm going to put cancer in, is a progesterone deficiency.
Yeah.
And then if you don't remove the ovaries still are not producing the way they should, just from the trauma of the surgery. So you have someone who is hugely progesterone deficit. Now they've even gone through a stressive surgery, which again would suck up all your progesterone, and then they're giving one hormone estrogen to supposedly fix all that, but it's a guarantee that you will be a chronic medical system user, because you'll need anti-anxiety drugs, sleep drugs, you're going to be gaining weight, your hair's going to fall out. It's a bonanza for big pharma to have
I actually think that when I've looked into the protective elements of progesterone, I don't know how the medical system are actually getting away with prescribing estrogen only HRT to these women, because progesterone is so protective against the damaging effects of estrogen, isn't it?
Right. Estrogen is well and good when you need it.
Yeah.
But if you're already dealing with too much estrogen, it becomes impossible, and hence all the symptomology. It just breaks my heart. I'm going to tell you another little story about a woman from Canada went to see a famous doctor in Nevada who did a lot of ozone treatments. She was diagnosed with stage 4 endometrial cancer. So she went there, spent about a month. But the company I'm working with right now donated some progesterone for her to use. It's only 8 mg/mL. The doctor told her to take a tablespoon, so now we're 120 milligrams. This particular dosage form is very well absorbed, so you can get by with lower doses. So after her stay, she was down-regulated to hyperplasia, no cancer.
Wow.
So she was in her 20s. She went back home to try and have a baby. But it was so quick and so profound. I found an article, I think it was from the University of California, San Diego. They were working on a test. So their observation was for endometrial cancer. As the cancer progressed, the progesterone receptors were actually diminishing in number.
Right.
So they were going to produce a test so you could determine how bad your cancer was.
Wow.
And in the introduction to the whole article on this test development, which I believe is probably valid, but they said prior to such and such a time, 80% of endometrial cancer was resolved with progesterone.
Wow.
I know. Now we think hysterectomy is the only choice. No, no, no.
No.
It's just another presentation of low progesterone.
Yeah. Can you just go through what other conditions does progesterone, just a list of other conditions that it treats commonly?
Okay. So you mentioned ADD, ADHD.
Yeah.
And Michael Platt wrote a book called Adrenaline. And progesterone is also an adrenaline balancer.
Yeah.
And for a large portion of those with the diagnosis of ADD, ADHD, they have high adrenaline. And giving those people, male and female, progesterone can balance that. He said it's fundamentally adrenaline goes up when your blood sugar goes down.
Yeah.
Progesterone also helps with maintaining a healthy blood glucose level. So that's playing into there. And then I began thinking some of those symptoms that we associate with estrogen so much, the anxiety, the panic, the irregular heartbeat, the, you know, the terror that takes women to hospitals thinking they're going to die, maybe more of the adrenaline effect.
Yeah.
And a couple things about that. Using food to get your blood sugar back up could help. Progesterone could help. And then there's this piece I mentioned before, methylation. Adrenaline, just like estrogen, is detoxified with methyl groups. So it's estimated about 40% of the population have insufficient methylation capacity. So that could be playing into that too. Where do you get the methyl groups? Phosphatidylcholine, betaine, like in betaine hydrochloride, all the B vitamins, if they're the active forms of the Bs, the methylated Bs, will give you methyl groups, or the foods that are associated with that, which are a lot of fruits and vegetables, et cetera. Yeah. So it's, you know, maybe a diet related thing too, to have this adrenaline not under control. And I believe that this adrenaline piece is a big piece of the mental health issues as well.
Yeah.
Bipolar disease, we had a couple women that we just gave them lots of progesterone and it worked like a charm. No yeah. more bipolar. and then it's just amazing. I ran across a woman named Doris King, and she wrote a couple books on this, and she suffered, diagnosed as bipolar and schizophrenic and whatnot, been drugged and insulin shock therapy. And then she came across John Lee's work, and she was smart enough to realize that she needed more than what John Lee was just saying, and she completely got herself out of it. Now she coaches other women how to use progesterone for bipolar and schizophrenia.
Wow. Yeah.
I know, amazing.
And you do, when you actually I've said this to my support group, actually, that when you do first start using progesterone, you do actually question yourself, is this a placebo effect? Because it works that quickly and that well, that you actually think, is this psychological? Am I just, you know, making this up? But actually, the further along you get in using this treatment, you realize that, no, it is actually working. And that's through years of not believing, or believing that progesterone was the enemy and caused you harm. And I think it's important for people. It's never sat right with me. I don't believe that your body could, we could be designed in a way that our body would cause us so much harm through a natural, something naturally produced within the body. It's just never sat right with me.
Okay, so early on, this is working so well, all this progesterone for women. But there were occasional women, even then, even with the dose, high doses we had, it wasn't working. I wrote a piece on my website, which, if I could say my website, the wellnessbydesignproject.com. And I wrote a piece called When Women Don't Like Progesterone, because it was a mystery to me. How could a hormone that belongs in your body, how could women have trouble with it? It just made no sense at all. And I learned quite a lot. I started digging, and outside of being underdosed, I think another huge problem is candida overgrowth. And it's absolutely more common than what you think. And conventional doctors don't even entertain this as a possibility. So if you have like burning, itching vaginal tissue, if you've got gut disturbances, either constipation or diarrhea, if you've got chronic sinus issues, sometimes rashes, sometimes burning skin, the burning and the itching in the vaginal area is not because there's a candida colony there. It's where your body is trying to get rid of the toxins that the candida is producing in your gut. So the gut needs to be treated.
Yeah.
There's even association with this overgrowth of candida with Parkinson's. I was just speaking last night with somebody who's been treating candida his whole practice. Parkinson's has been shown actually to be catchy and into relationships, which is pretty weird.
Yeah.
But he says the candida issue and treating the candida broke the cycle. So I really did a big dive into candida, and I happened to go to an autism conference, and this particular one just zeroed in on candida and autistic children's guts.
Right.
And I go, my goodness, I've been so concerned about this for its hormone issues that I didn't even think about the kids. And the kids really have a disordered gut. There's other things. And then there's including all the additional estrogen burdens that you have to deal with, that you need more progesterone. So I had two women say, when I titled it When Women Don't Like Progesterone, they said that was too mild a term. It should be hate. But otherwise, it's gotten a good response. And read by 40,000 people on World Health Net. So it's of interest. I want to get this message out. Somebody said, you're always just talking about progesterone, and they go, well, we talk about other hormones, but this is what's needed. and then we've been taught to fear hormones, and really justifiably so, when we have hormone therapies that are not really hormones at all. They are drugs, they're altered. chemical structures. Your body has never seen them before until you swallow a thing like that. How did we get to swallowing things like Premarin? I'll tell you, because somebody called me once and his wife was having terrible hormone problems. And I go, why are you calling here? You know? So I figured she had to use Premarin if he was selling it. He was a trainer. And it turned out that they had originally, I think it was Aorsta at the time, used pregnant women's urine.
Yeah.
For hormone replacement. And wouldn't that be lovely? But then it got to be too expensive, so they went to baboons and then finally settled on horses. There is nothing here about human normal physiology. It's a totally economic thing. And then to think that in the U.S., the government supported this huge study, the Women's Health Initiative. And what do we use? We use Premarin, which doesn't belong in the human body, and medroxyprogesterone acetate,
yeah.
A fake Premarin, progesterone. So whatever information you pull out of that is not valid for healthy human function.
Because a lot of the research as well, when you look into mainstream medical research, a lot of the research that has been done on progesterone, which kind of villainizes progesterone, is not actually body identical progesterone, is it? It's progestins or progestogens, which are synthetic forms of progesterone. So it's almost being given a bad name and a bad rap, but it's not actually the true body identical hormone.
Right, absolutely not. A good case for that point is in California. Any progesterone product is required to have a label on it, even the compounded ones, that it's a potential carcinogenic. So I contacted the department that was in charge of putting this proposition. It's got a proposition number. I wanted to see the research they based that decision on. It was about 80 papers. Not one of them looked at progesterone. It was all totally 100% progestin. Yet we're required to send this cancer-producing message out to the world. And what are women supposed to think?
Yeah.
It's very sloppy work. And a client, we tried to get a review on that. They refused to do it.
Wow. Right, okay.
No evidence for progesterone being carcinogenic.
No. Okay. So I have got some questions for you.
Okay.
Because I think as women in surgical menopause with a history of PMDD, I think especially in surgical menopause, we are left behind when it comes to advice around how to treat a woman that hasn't got any ovaries. How do you get that balance with hormones? So... have you helped any women in surgical menopause?
Oh, definitely. And really it's understanding that the ovaries don't just make estrogen or progesterone for that matter. Funny they leave that out, right? Really funny, but when you have your ovaries removed, 50% of your testosterone goes.
Yeah.
And that's huge. Testosterone's involved in all protein synthesis in your body. So what does that mean? It means your body structure, your bones and your muscles. And it's a brain active hormone. It's if you look at aging old men and old ladies, they have sarcopenia. Their structure is actually shrinking.
Yeah.
You could reverse that with testosterone in part. Your ovaries actually make DHEA too. So why aren't we using DHEA? So I would say you can pretty much help everybody with a hysterectomy and an oophorectomy if you give a complement of hormones.
Yeah.
And And in hysterectomy, Katarina Dalton wrote this first. She said, women with hysterectomy need far more progesterone than women with natural aging.
Right, okay.
Because their deficit has been so great for so long. So whereas conventional medicine says you don't need it at all, she said, and she's right, that those women need a lot more.
Yeah, it makes sense, doesn't it? So yep. how would you rank hormones in their importance? Which hormones would you place?
In importance?
Yeah.
If we go by abundance, then you've got to start with progesterone, most abundant. And yeah. then women are surprised by this. Testosterone's next yeah. abundant. And then estrogen. And DHEA is probably more like in the middle with testosterone. But it's steadily declining. The older you are, the more likely your DHEA has gone down in a linear fashion. So we need to look at that. Gives you a tremendous amount of resilience and also is a precursor for estrogens and testosterone. So yeah. it's a wonderful backup system. I feel like what we call menopause, if you hit menopause, stopping of the cycle, and you have symptoms, it's now adrenal pause, not because the symptoms mean that your adrenals are shut down too. They're not providing yeah. the hormone support that nature intended you to have after ovulation stopped. So yeah. it's a big adrenal thing. So DHEA is the major human steroid hormone, but it's steadily declined with life. So it's going to be lower as you age. But I'd certainly look at that as a major part of.
And just as a supplement, because you can purchase it online, can't you? A good quality DHEA yeah. supplement. Yeah.
Yes, you can.
And what sort of dose would you be looking at, do you think?
Okay, so I give you two extremes. One is, this was a protocol developed by a physician in California long ago when we first started compounding with DHEA. He said 5 milligrams orally, increased by 5 milligrams every week until you feel a sense of resilience.
Okay.
And that seems kind of vague, but you know it when you feel it. It's very strange. I had to try it myself to verify.
A lot of it is about trust, though, isn't it? And it's about intuition and seeing how your body feels whilst you're manipulating your hormones in a way that's therapeutic for you as an individual.
Right, right. So it's really nice if you could get a panel and look at all the hormones your deficit in. I like Life Extension in the U.S. You could look on their website. The panel I like is called Female Elite.
Right.
And it gives you a whole thyroid panel. It gives you pituitary hormones, sex hormones, adrenal hormones, vitamin D. That's another thing, that if you're low in vitamin D,
yeah,
the rest of your constellation of steroidal hormones don't seem to work as well either. So what I like about that test is that it's examining all the hormones in relationship to each other. And I missed a major one, insulin glucose. This really got to be looked at. This is actually my major thing that I look at first.
Okay.
And then down to adrenal, thyroid, and sex hormones. So all these things need to be looked at and addressed. They have a blood chemistry, which gives you other things, some inflammatory markers that give you some guidance on how to go forward. So there's none of these tests are unusual tests.
So if you were working with a client or a patient or whatever, would you assess blood results to determine dosage requirements, or would there still be an element of sort of symptomatic assessment and just seeing how the patient feels?
Yeah, about 99% really depends on that. Doing the blood tests, let's say as an initial or any other test for that matter, only establishes if you are low or not. It doesn't tell you what dosage form to use, what dosage to use. All of that is trial and error. You can, basically you try and just start and keep in mind some of the physical characteristics. Like, for example, a skinny smoker needs a whole lot more estrogen than somebody who's not a skinny smoker. Or a very athletic woman will have a huger need for all hormones than a sedentary woman. So keeping that in mind and sort of picking a place to start and then adjust. I'm fully in support that women need to be, and why they need permission is beyond me, but we're so well trained to listen to what the doctor says. But women need to be able to adjust their doses according to how they're feeling.
Yeah.
And as you experience yourself, the change with progesterone is rapid.
Yeah.
But I will also say, let's say you're 80% better. There's no reason you can't be 100% better. Yeah. And the message that you get in conventional medicine is usually that you have to put up and shut up.
Yeah.
Rather than say, everything could be taken care of. I could, you know, could be at the top of my game here.
Yeah.
The hormones are a big pillar in all the anti-aging medical groups. They're substantial. So why are we denying that? And in the U.S. after WHI, we had a committee decide that women should only use hormones for 5 years. Well, so because they're so dangerous. Well, yes, if you're taking Premarin and Provera, deoxyprogesterone, not taking them would be a good idea. But women who have been using bioidentical hormones are doing so fine, and then the doctor says we're going to have to stop. It's insanity. Insanity. I was bumping up my mom's hormones when she was in her 90s.
Yes. would you give estradiol to restore hormones to a youthful level, or do you replace with estriol?
Okay, so
the weaker. Yeah.
I've changed my mind as I've gotten older because estradiol is the most brain active.
Okay,
estriol has little brain activity, so cognition is really important. Actually, when I worked in the pharmacy, somebody called from the press and they said, oh, what are women most afraid of? And I said, they're afraid of losing their mind, which is what they were saying. And and the reporter said, no, they're afraid of breast cancer. I said, doesn't stack up to losing your mind. And it's a reality. I once worked with a older soap opera star. She couldn't remember her lines.
Right.
I got her settled in with some hormones, and her career lasted years and years longer. It's cognition is a big issue. So estradiol is much better. If everything's working in your body correctly for your detoxification, you're going to be making plenty of estriol. But in reality, it's the hormone of excretion. It's particularly got more receptors in the urinary tract and the vaginal tissue than the beta receptors respond more to estriol. And estriol is more effective for that. So if you have vaginal dryness or chronic UTIs, nothing with estriol.
Right, okay. And in respects, you know, when you said that Katharina Dalton had mentioned that women who have a hysterectomy need more progesterone compared to a woman that has still got her uterus and her ovaries. Do you think that is the same with estrogen and testosterone? Do you think the same applies?
Yes. As I mentioned, if you cut out the ovaries, 50% of your testosterone is gone. Now, I haven't seen a equivalent from estrogen, but definitely estrogen too would be much more needed because you have no possibility.
But still, in terms of it's not just, you can't just throw hormones at this and just expect them to work. Like, there's no, you need to balance those hormones. So you do still need to stick to the ratios, don't you, of like progesterone being the most abundant, then testosterone, then estrogen.
Right, right.
Whereas we're sort of prescribed hormones, but just the kind of pushing estrogen really high, yeah, almost to compensate the lack of progesterone, exactly, and testosterone.
Exactly. That's exactly what's happening. And it's
wrong. Causing more problems.
And if you have somebody like that who's using estrogen only, if you want to start progesterone, you should half the amount of estrogen, because you're going to intensify whatever estrogen is there,
yeah,
by the effect on the receptors with progesterone. So in order to get to some balance, you have to take that into consideration, diminish yeah, that. So it's an important thing when you're trying to work with somebody with hysterectomy who's been given estrogen. That estrogen is going to be much more potent.
Yeah, when you start adding in progesterone. Mm-hmm. Do you think that by adding in progesterone, it makes the estrogen that you already have in your system work better?
Yes.
Right.
Definitely. Okay. Definitely. So when you're perimenopause, before you... progesterone is the first thing you should use. It's going to get rid of heavy bleeding. It's going to get rid of headaches. It's going to get rid of anxiety, water retention, hot flashes. All that is progesterone related. Although many say it's the estrogen. Estrogen hasn't dropped yet. You have the highest amount of estrogen in your lifetime during peri. Yeah. So putting in estrogen, and either doctors refuse to give women anything when they're suffering, or they tend to give them estrogen, which just can compound the issue.
Yeah. And ideally, they just need progesterone at that time, don't they?
Right, right. And then as they get closer to menopause, then you can start thinking about adding the estrogen and testosterone.
What's your thoughts about progesterone converting into estrogen and testosterone?
Painfully, it'll never get there. If you look at the flow chart, DHEA goes into that very readily. Progesterone is going to go to cortisol, and cortisol derivatives, it's not going to easily go down to estrogen and testosterone. Theoretically, pregnenolone, or theoretically cholesterol, you could supplement cholesterol and get all your hormones. And that's actually been done. So, but whether it gets to every place that you need it is still questionable. Each of those steps require a coenzyme and cofactor. What are those? Those are vitamins and minerals. So you did allude to that a little bit earlier. So that should be looked at. For example, progesterone really needs B6 and magnesium. So if you are using higher doses, you should be cognizant of that and make sure those things are replenished, because you could in turn create deficiencies in those nutrients while you're pushing progesterone up.
Right. Okay. That makes sense. I have a lady who has done the trial of adding in the progesterone these past 6 weeks, and she's really struggled with really sore, tender breasts.
That's perfect. That means that I'm never
progesterone. So the question is, should a woman continue to increase progesterone?
Yes.
If she's having those types of symptoms.
Yes, and if she's got a cream, put it right on the breast.
Yeah.
Because it will increase the blood level there of the progesterone to receptors right there. Yeah. But it's a hallmark of not enough progesterone.
Okay. And how long would you expect breasts to be swollen and lumpy and painful before they calm down if they keep on increasing progesterone?
Oh, probably not long at all, maybe same day for the swelling. Now, if you have breast lumps, that too responds to progesterone and iodine.
Right, okay.
So if you have fibrocystic breast disease, that can be resolved.
Yeah, and the iodine helps with...
Yeah, and one of my colleagues had to add DIM, and then her cyst resolved entirely.
Wow.
So I personally struggled with that, and I used progesterone and iodine, and gone.
I think I've covered everything that I want to ask. I think I've covered everything that I wanted to ask. Is there anything more that you want to add?
No, except for PMDD is just, it's just words. And it was constructed to sell Prozac's new Prozac Light. It has nothing to do with reality and what's really happening. I go back to Dr. Katarina Dalton. She did a fine job with assigning the symptomatology that she saw with low progesterone. You can find this in other places, what progesterone deficiency is. I put a piece on my website, and I took it from somebody else. She's passed away now. I took it from another website, so I don't have all the references for that. And somebody said to me, well, I can't believe all of those, but I do believe it. There's a progesterone deficiency. And what I really liked about it, the list was so long, you had to scroll down to look at over 100 deficiency symptoms. And so many don't realize that it's connected to progesterone. So it's worthwhile looking into that, what progesterone deficiency symptoms actually are.
Yeah. Because there has also been an association that was set up in Dr. Katarina Dalton's name called the National Association of Premenstrual Syndrome, I believe, that still runs today. And it really surprises me that even they have kind of U-turned on their advice of what Dr. Katarina Dalton, what her actual work was about, which is, it's really quite scary when you do get to the bottom of all this research and find that actually we're not speaking about it anymore, and women are just put through a hysterectomy. And like you said, these women and young girls are getting younger, and they've been, you know, they're having to choose between surgery and giving up the chance of having their own families, to rid themselves of this condition, when in actual fact, and the other thing is, prior to going down the route of surgery for treatment of PMDD, there is no thorough hormonal investigations done into these women to see if there are any hormone deficiencies that could be resolved, which is just, it's insane when you actually think about what we've had to endure and what we've been through in order to come full circle and find that actually it was progesterone that was missing all along. And it's kind of a bittersweet ending to a really long road of painful suffering, and nobody will understand the extent of this condition and the suffering that you go through unless you've experienced it yourself, or like you've seen the extreme end of this condition. But you've also seen these women's lives being turned around through simply the use of progesterone, which is quite incredible. And those women were maybe lucky to find someone like you before going down that road.
Yeah, very, very lucky if they do. But if you had a hysterectomy, like we talked about, it's really not too late. You can support with bioidentical hormones, the major hormones. Surprisingly, at this day and age, and humankind's been around for a long time, there's so much we don't know about how our bodies work.
Yeah,
we don't know the uterus. They think the uterus has a lot more things going on than we even imagine, yet we're cutting it out willy-nilly and not worrying about consequences.
Yeah,
it's sheer ignorance. So it's we're not better than years and years ago.
It wouldn't happen to men, would it? You know,
well, it would. Don't. I object to that statement a little bit because we're sort of entrained to think that and say that, but you have no idea how badly men suffer as well as their hormones drop. And the prostate enlargement, the lack of erectile dysfunction, you know, erectile dysfunction, the things they have to endure if they think they have cancer, the biopsies in the prostate, which is excruciating. Men do suffer a great deal.
Yeah.
And they are as badly treated as women are, hands down. I don't think there's any difference. But, you know, like for prostate enlargement, progesterone is helpful for that. Men who have sleep problems, helpful for that. Young men who are losing their hair have low progesterone. They also have insulin resistance. Who's looking at that? So, you know, the drug, the Proscar that they give young men losing hair is an altered progesterone molecule. Just give them progesterone. They'll feel better. And that drug in Canada, there's, I think it's called Proscar. Or no, Propecia is a hair one. It's a lower dose than the Proscar, which they give for prostate enlargement. So why are we using altered molecules to do the thing that progesterone was supposed to be doing?
Yeah.
And men suffer with these drugs. It's no doubt about it. And they haven't solved it for them either. We're both equally, both sexes equally suffer from the pharmaceutical the medical industry.
We do, yeah. I personally meant in terms of women are easily put down the surgical route to remove the reproductive system a lot more so than what men are, but we do still have the same problems and we do still deal with the same system.
I have to check on the numbers of prostate removals. Not for my prostate. I don't know, but it, you know, it's very lucrative for the doctors to be cutting things out.
Yeah, which is really sad.
Yeah, and my personal belief is nothing should be cut out if you can help it. And so really, when that's being proposed to you to do a deep dive, and a lot of uteruses are cut out simply because of hyperplasia, easily fixed with progesterone in the follicular phase, but are they offered that? Mostly women are told, well, it happens all the time. When it gets really bad, we'll cut it out.
Yeah.
So sort of a sickness going on, but we have a lot of sickness in our whole medical industrial complex. So it's not a wellness.
Yeah. So it is about getting the word out there and raising awareness about what can actually be done with the right therapeutic level of hormones, essentially.
Right. As your experience, it can be life-changing.
Yeah, and people are so unaware, aren't they? So it's been great to speak to you. And thank you for coming on. I've really enjoyed our conversation today.
Yeah, me too.
And maybe we can speak again sometime.
Okay.
And thank you very much.